Are you using the your Indian name?
With the book, in connection with the book.
But you normally use Trogdon.
Yeah, for business matters, it's Bill Trogdon. And call me Bill if you would.
Okay.
The last name, if it should come up, is Heat Moon, not Moon.
Heat Moon.
Yeah, I probably should have put a hyphen in there. But, if you want to do that on any future things, go ahead and put it in to make that clear. We're afraid we're going to be connected with the Reverend Moon.
No, I don't think so. All right, well, let's start. Our tape is rolling. Bill, what were the circumstances that led to your odyssey around the continent?
I'm afraid they were all negative. I was teaching at Stevens College in Columbia, Missouri, and because of declining enrollment, my part-time job became a job of no time. I was laid off, and a marriage of 10 years was in its last stages, and I had enough degrees that I should have been teaching, and I still couldn't find a teaching job. So it began with negative circumstances. And it seemed to me the time, at the age of 38, the time to take off and fulfill a wish that so many of us as Americans have, and that is to go along the highway and simply see what lies in America. In my case, I was interested in seeing what lies along the back roads or the blue highways.
Yes, I was going to ask you about the title of the book. What do you mean by blue highways?
On the old filling station maps, the main routes were in red, the federal routes were in red, and the back roads were traditionally in blue. And the only design I had for the trip was to stay along the back roads or the blue highways as I traveled.
How did you, without a job, how did you bankroll this odyssey?
Partly with plastic money. I had 4 gasoline credit cards, and I had $428 out of a savings account. I did the trip in 1978 at the time that gasoline was about 65 cents a gallon. That helped some. And one of the good things about traveling Blue Highway America is that food prices are considerably less, certainly less than they are in New York City. And sleeping in the back end of a truck, as I did, I had a bunk put in the, or built a bunk in the back of my van. I had thereby no motel expenses. And many times I would have maybe a day where I spent only $2 or $3. There was a lot of peanut butter on the trip too, I'm afraid.
Well, I was going to ask you about your vehicle. Tell me about that.
It's a half-ton Ford Econoline van, 1975. It had a bad water pump when I left, and it subsequently gave out after about 9,000 miles of knocking. The back end I outfitted with a wooden bunk made out of 2x4s, put a little carpeting in to make the floor warm, and I had a sink and a portable toilet, and that was pretty much it. Just the necessaries, in other words.
How long did you plan to stay on the road, and how long actually was your trip?
I figured on whatever time the money would hold out for, which means that I was managed to take that $428 in cash and stretch it over 3 months. I left on the first day of spring and came back nearly on the first day of summer, a full season.
Did you sit down with a map and carefully chart your route, or did you just take off?
I had the design of staying on the blue highways, and also I wanted to stay with the warm weather. Since I left when snow was still on the ground, I headed to the south first, and then as the warm air became warmer, later in the season I began moving north. Other than that, I had no charted course. It was simply what lay in the front end of the truck, following it pretty much. I did once in a while look at a map to find a town, for example, Nameless, Tennessee. I saw that on the map, and it was 40 miles the opposite direction that I was generally heading. But I turned around and went back simply because I was curious about a town named Nameless, Tennessee.
Do the maps still have highways in blue? It's been so long since I've seen a road map.
Well, yeah, you no longer get them free in the stations anymore. The new Rand McNally Atlas, I suppose, is the classic of American travelers. The interstates now are blue, and the back roads tend to be red. So I guess those things are changing, too.
As you went on your travels, did you? How much similarity was there among all the little towns that you went through?
Not much, especially when you would move from one region to another. There might be similarity from one town to the next town down the line, but to move from Georgia toward Texas, the differences could be striking and fascinating. I would say one of the common elements that I saw in Backroad America was a sense of community among the people, and also something that might come as a surprise, and that is the health of small-town America. These towns, it seems to me we've been led to believe in the urban areas, are dying out. They're on their last legs. And I don't think that's true. I saw a good number of them that are quite healthy. They may have lost population, but now it seems that they've stabilized, and I find it reassuring to know that rural America, small-town America, maybe I should say, is still alive and well.
Mm-hmm. What about the people? You say there seems to be a sense of, I think, did you use the term unity a moment ago or something like that? Did you find the American character pretty much the same at each stop, or were people radically different as you went north and south, east and west?
No, I found striking differences, fascinating differences among the people. And one notion, I guess, that I came away with after 3 months on the road is that America today, it seems to me, is bound more by our differences and our the things that we don't share, oddly enough, than what we do share. And it's, I suppose, a respect and a fascination with our differences that helps keep us together. Well, whatever note Blue Highway seems to be striking with readers, I have a notion that may be a part of it, the fascination that we have with people who are unlike ourselves.
How did you capture the dialogue? Did you use a tape recorder, or do you have a good memory, or did you take some poetic license?
I think I may have an adequate or maybe a good oral memory, but it's a very short-term sort of thing. I would try to listen very carefully as I talk with someone, and then later I would take a small microcassette while I was driving down the road, reconstruct the conversations. I would give my language, give my words, and then what the other person said back and forth. And when I got home and realized that maybe this could be a book, I put together a type script and sent that to the people who now appear in the book and asked them to critique it for accuracy and the right tone of the language. So each person who appears did look at the draft of what I've written about him or her, and Little Brown, the publisher, did want me to have signed releases, so that was necessary for that too.
You mean as you went around, you actually got everybody's name and address?
I got a name and address simply because I wanted to write them and thank them for their hospitality. And the people who weren't hospitable, I don't have any names and addresses. And there were a couple of people that I failed for one reason or another to note that down, especially people I would meet in a bar. After 12 o'clock, I found my memory for doing certain details slipping.
Well, I noticed in Blue Highways that you seem to have not too much difficulty in getting these people to open up. How do you do this? How can you just walk up to a stranger and get this outpouring that you seem to have gotten?
There were times where I was unable to strike up conversations. It was especially true when I was in the central north of the United States, in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and North Dakota. I found conversations more difficult to come by there. And as a result, that part of the book looks more at the land than at the people. In other places where I did find townspeople willing to talk, I would assume that if there's any secret at all, I don't claim to have any secrets, but if there should be one, it may be a willingness to listen. And I assume in the minds of the person who's speaking, if they see that you're listening, they assume also that you probably respect their lives, since that's what they're talking about. And I think the openness came out of that respect that I had for them as people who had seen some times that I hadn't seen.
3 months on the road, did you ever get lonely, tired?
I would say most of the time I was lonely when I wasn't sharing it with a stranger, so to speak. The people that I met on the road broke that loneliness, that isolation that I felt. I think traveling alone is you become companionable. You become much more sociable. Steinbeck, when he took his trip around America in 1960, the one that he describes in Travels with Charlie, took his poodle, Charlie, and it's a fine book in many ways, but one of my personal complaints is that he spent a little too much time talking to the dog and not enough to men and women. And I think if you do travel with another person or with a pet, that you may end up talking to them rather than the strangers that you meet along the road.
Did you ever read Ray Raphael's Edges?
No, I don't know that book.
It's a book very similar to yours that was published about 1976, I think, by Little Brown. I think. Knopf. It was published by Knopf. It also focuses on small-town America, mostly in California and the West Coast, and it reads very much like yours. Well, I have one last question for you, William Least Heat Moon, and you touched upon this before, but I'd like to ask again for your conclusions about America and its people after 3 months driving along the Blue Highways.
I guess I came up with a number of conclusions. Nothing, I think, that we don't know. There's nothing in the book that's new under our sun. But the thing, I suppose, that I was most struck with was the importance of to democracy for each American to respect the differences that we have and see in each other. Maybe admiration isn't necessary, but something more than tolerance, an interest in one another, in our differences, I think is maybe the heartbeat of democracy. And the thing that concerns me is a privatism that we can see now, especially from the 70s and continuing in the 80s, a sense of an overweening sense of ego. And I would hope that this ego, which produces perhaps a kind of privatism, doesn't go any farther, because I think it is a threat to the democratic spirit.
Well, one last question. What's next? Do you plan to take a tour of the urban environment at some point?
I'm going to leave the blue highways of New York City to somebody else. I would be absolutely overwhelmed to try to tackle that. I'm working on a book that deals with small-town America again, but it's going to be, in a sense, a vertical search, and I see blue highways as a horizontal search.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.